Crime Curious is a true crime podcast that takes an in-depth look into real cases through the lens of a trained investigator and former prosecutor turned judge.
If you are sensitive to expletives, anatomical descriptions, and accurate descriptions of crime scenes, this podcast may not be suitable for you.
Have you or someone you love been a victim of a crime that's still unsolved? Crime Curious has teamed up with one of the top private investigation services in the Indiana and surrounding area. If you have listened to us long enough, you know that we do not seek out services or products that are meaningless to us or hold no real value. So you can trust us when we say that Corbett Investigations comes with decades of experience you won't find anyplace else. Corbett Investigations is run by a former homicide commander of one of the country's most successful homicide units, has put over 400 people in prison for homicide, handled over 1,100 death investigations, and solved 33 cold case murders. To be real with you, Mr. Corbett had a really difficult time telling us what we should highlight in this segment because he does not like to sound like he's bragging. Solving crimes has been his life's passion, and he has never done it for the accolades or recognition. He has a whole team behind his services that help him be so successful, as they specialize in things like bloodstain analysis, ballistics, crime scene reconstruction, and forensic pathology, just to name a few. When you contact Corbett Investigations, you talk directly with Tim Corbett. He is hands-on with every case and can travel anywhere that's needed to get the job done. Corbett Investigations prides itself on honesty, truth, feet to the ground, real investigation work, and the strength to stand up to whatever is in the way of solving the crime. Corbett Investigations specializes in complex homicide cases, sex offenses, and criminal investigations that are old and new. Tim and his team have a reputation for finding witnesses and information that others could not. Although we hope none of our listeners ever need private investigation services, if you do, we recommend contacting Corbett Investigations and mention this segment on Crime Curious for a free consultation. Contact Tim Corbett today at 574-229-8115. You can also check them out on Facebook at Corbett Investigative Services, Inc. or their email, tim@tcorbett.org. That's tim@tcorbett.org. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show. Welcome to Crime Curious.
What?
I almost said happy birthday.
Because it was Jason's birthday.
We just ended an episode for our Patreons where
to happy birthday.
We were wishing Jason, Brainbath Jason, a happy birthday. And that's how I was going to start this episode. Welcome to happy birthday.
And I'm very, Charnel. Very unbirthday to the rest of you. I'm Megan.
Yes. If it's not your birthday, that sucks. Yeah, sorry.
It is to us.
Oh, yes.
We are happy that you were all born. And therefore.
Therefore, happy being on this Earth Day.
Yeah, I argue for a living. I made sense of it.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you guys aren't Patreons, we did just release an hour-long bonus. Well, first of all, we've released a ton of bonus episodes for June.
Oh, yeah. But like 5 episodes so far.
Yeah. And but we did a special Brainbath episode in honor of our friend Brainbath Jason, yes, whose birthday is today while we are recording. For whatever reason, he didn't want to spend his birthday evening recording with us. Family. Yeah.
You can also check us out on social media. We have a Facebook page.
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should post more on there.
I try.
We need a social media manager.
Well, no, I post a lot on the Patreon page. See, right. If you join Patreon, you just get so much special attention. Like we put you on pedestals and we pet you and add flowers to your hair, and there's just all of that.
It's very true.
And if you don't want to do Patreon and are just really fantastic general episode people, then enjoy, because this is what you're getting instead.
Right. I do have a really disturbing case. And what is odd, I had pulled it up and for a brief moment thought, oh my gosh, Megan, we've already done this case. You know, I get that. Did my notes get mixed up? What really happened is that about a month ago now, I don't know, time is different for me anymore these days, but I presented a case to Jason while you were gone.
Yeah.
And this case has so many striking similarities that it made me think we already did it, but we have not. Okay. This is the case of Sophie Elliott, who was just 22 when she was tragically murdered.
Okay.
Strap in, sister, because
I have my comfort item.
Yes. Oh, speaking of that, we should shake our gree-gree. Oh, my gosh. I threw us off with the happy birthday.
You did. Man. Glad you remembered.
Got it all here. All right. So let's talk a little bit about Sophie Kate Elliott. She was born on June 11th, which is today, the day we are recording, and Jason's birthday.
Is this intentional?
No.
Wow.
This was an entire coincidence, which there are no coincidences in the world. So, hi, Sophie. We are covering your case today. She was born in 1985 in New Zealand.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
She was the only daughter of parents Gilbert and Leslie Elliott and the younger sister of Nick and Chris Elliott. Her parents, Leslie and Gilbert, got married and had her, but she had two older siblings from a different marriage.
She was the only of their children together.
Correct.
I'm like, how are you an only child with two other siblings?
Right, because Gilbert...
I was racking my brain.
Yep, Gilbert had two other
children.
Children. Mm-hmm. Sophie really enjoyed sports, music, dancing. She was an honor roll student in economics at the University of Otago, O-T-A-G-O. And she actually, by the way, she is so absolutely adorable. People described her as being very outspoken and popular, and I can see why. Like, when you see a picture of her, she just seems so spunky and carefree, and she's just so cute.
To be 22, college student, yep. Figuring out who you are, living your best life.
She was actually getting ready to move to Wellington to begin a new job at the Treasury office.
Yeah, so 22, she actually probably was a senior getting close to be done at university.
Yeah, yep. So now let's switch gears and talk a little bit about Clayton freaking Robert Weatherston.
I don't feel like we like Clayton.
Was it the way I said his name? Was it something I said, Megan?
It was.
Yeah. He was 33.
All right.
Okay.
He was born. We've heard where. I mean, it's only 11 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same distance between my husband and I.
Right.
I was not 22 when I started, you know, dating him, but still, I have no idea. I don't know where the accent came from. I'm sorry.
Just enjoying it and smiling. If you've ever heard a smile through a microphone, you just did.
Now you have. So Clayton was born January 9th, 1976, same year as Jason.
My God.
Which that is very
the
bizarre.
Similarities today.
Yes. He was actually a professor at Otago University. So he's a lecturer. He was described actually as a tutor, but he was also a lecturer. So
yeah, I'm liking him less and less now, though.
Yeah, he had classes.
But position of power and authority.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, whether it was his title professor or just, you know, teacher, whatever, he did work in that role
and
at the university.
And clearly is going to come to know her through his employment.
Mm-hmm. He also had a history of documented mental illness, and a lot of the coverage of this case will say in no uncertain terms that he was not mentally ill, okay? But his defense... for what he does, and we're going to get to it. His defense said, or what he says, like, well, the reason why he did this was because he was provoked. Or did I say that right? Yeah, provoked. Well, I was reading ahead and thought I mixed words up. But yeah, he claims that he was provoked. And I know our crime curious family really well, and y'all are going to rage when you hear what this man did and wonder how anyone could simply say that A, this guy had no mental illness, and that what he did was justified by being provoked.
Okay. So, I have some opinions on being provoked as well, but I'll hold them for now.
Prepare for a wild ride here. So Sophie and Clayton began having a relationship in June 2007. It was described as being on again, off again. Sophie was 22, Clayton was 33. As I said, it was not healthy or stable by any means. I found plenty of resources that took information from the defense, who, of course, tried to paint Sophie in a light that would make the provocation defense stick. And it's all coming from, you know, the human colostomy bag, Clayton Weatherston. So I'm not inclined to believe a single word of it. And I'm not going to regurgitate it here, especially because what we have here is a domestic abuser.
Okay.
Nothing that he says will be anything but self-serving in any way. Okay, so like, why should we listen to him? And we'll get to why I feel that way. But truly, they really tried to paint Sophie in a light that would say, see how he could have been provoked into doing this?
She had it coming?
Yes, or like any reasonable person would have reacted this way.
The way that he did?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
But it's bullshit. In my opinion, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the fight that Sophie and Clayton did get into, or any of the fights throughout their on-again, off-again relationship, was more than likely provoked by his possessiveness, his jealousy, his demands, and gaslighting bullshit. By December 2007, though, so they start dating in June, and then by December, the relationship had ended. Sophie actually took a new job. She was looking forward to moving, and she was too good for this guy anyway. That's not a super long relationship. It's a 6-month relationship. So for it to have gotten to this point, and it wasn't a stable relationship at all. Okay.
In just 6 months, it's going to deteriorate this much.
Mm-hmm. In December 2007, which is when the relationship ended, Clayton told Sophie that he wished she was dead and hoped that the plane that she was about to board for her move to her new job would crash.
What a dick.
And I apologize because the plane she was actually getting on was not for her new job at that time. It was, she was going to visit a friend in Australia on vacation.
Okay.
And to visit visit her brothers.
Okay.
So
I wondered if it was a male friend, but irrespective, he's like, I hope you crash.
He did. She's going with a friend to Australia to visit her brothers, a family, you know, affair, essentially. And he is saying, I hope you die and I hope that the plane crashes. Again, why I'm taking a guess to say that a lot of the fights that they did have were probably instigated by Clayton in his jealous possessiveness. How dare you go on vacation without me?
Because he makes comments like that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Classic abuser, in my opinion.
Absolutely. You're not worth anything. Yeah. I hope bad things happen to you. If you're not with me, all the bad things will happen.
And to hang out, you know, you're going with a friend, right? Yeah. Abusers like to isolate their victims.
And after they end the relationship, too. So yes. They break up, and he's still pissed at her calling her names and wishing harm on her because she's going to go on a trip.
This all happened at the same time. Simultaneously. I think that this might have been the last straw it broke. Yeah, okay. Of just like, okay, I'm going to visit my brothers with my friend and we're done here, you know, kind of situation. And he doesn't want her family to have her alone to give any sort of time to convince her what an asshole he is, right? So that was December. Now we're into January.
I'm buckled up. I'm ready.
On his birthday, on January 9th, 2008, Clayton was supposed to go have a birthday lunch with his mommy.
He should have.
Should have. Absolutely, he should have. Instead, he devised some other plans, Megan. He skipped lunch with his mother, and he went to Sophie's home instead. On January 9th, Sophie was in her bedroom at her family home packing for her move to Wellington, where she was going to start her new job in the treasury in Wellington. So Clayton drives to Sophie's house, and he had a knife hidden in his computer bag. Sophie's mother, Leslie Elliott, answered the door for Clayton. Clayton said that he wanted to see Sophie because he had something for her. Clayton went up to Sophie's bedroom. Leslie Elliott, this is going to break your heart, trigger alert, everybody. Leslie Elliott listened outside of the room for any sort of unusual noises. She did not trust Clayton either.
Okay.
She heard the words, "Don't Clayton," and "Stop Clayton." So then she tried to open the door, but couldn't.
He barricaded mm-hmm. it.
When she was finally able to get the door open, she was too late. Leslie saw Sophie lying dead on the floor and covered in blood.
Oh, my God.
Clayton was straddling Sophie's body and stabbing her.
Okay.
Even after she got the door open. He did not stop.
No.
No.
Or even attempted to not get caught. He literally knew he was doing this in front of her mother.
Once he realized that she was there and he was still stabbing her, he then pushed the door closed with enough force. I mean, he's got adrenaline going at this point.
Like, she bothered him.
Yes.
She interrupted him.
Shutting Leslie out of the room. So, of course, Leslie Elliott, hysterical, calls the police. And when officers arrive on the scene, they had to go get Clayton to open the door. So the officers can't get in either. They have to coax him. He is still in there with Sophie's body.
Who he has murdered.
Yes.
And mutilated.
Yes. But Megan, he has, he has no mental health issues. He was just provoked. So when the first policeman on the scene asked Clayton what happened, they get him. He finally comes and opens the door, or they get in. That detail was fuzzy.
You can just bust on in when you have.
No, I mean Sophie's room.
Oh, gotcha.
I found it different ways.
Okay.
That the police had to gain entry, and that he did eventually come to the door. So I am unsure of which one is the most accurate.
Minor detail.
It is. Either way, there it is. But when he is first interviewed and asked what happened, in a very calm and normal tone, he says, "I killed her." Well, yeah, no shit. Like, doesn't take an actual investigator to see that. When asked why he killed Sophie, Clayton said, quote, "The emotional pain that she has caused me over the past year," end quote.
That does not meet a definition of provocation.
I wouldn't think so either.
If someone is provoked into assaulting you, or if you are provoked into assaulting someone, it needs to be something that occurs almost in the immediate, right?
Yes.
Think of toddlers, and you have one like poking you in the forehead. Hey, 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 hey. And you finally get sick of it. So you like bite their finger.
Yeah. Yes.
What you have described to me is not provocation.
No.
It's Megan, having a hard time internalizing Megan, the end of a relationship.
He brought his own knife in his computer bag.
Yes.
It's not like he grabbed a lamp, an item from Sophie's bedroom, and was provoked into this kind of rage. There, in my opinion, is premeditation.
Absolutely.
So it seems like this is going to be a pretty easy case at trial, right?
Well, you're going to prove me wrong.
Yes, that would be wrong. It gained gigantic media attention because of the gruesomeness of the attack, which happened right with her mother on the other side of the door, which only adds a morbid twist to all of this, and my heart aches for her entire family. But Clayton's defense was that Sophie attacked him with a pair of scissors, provoking his counterattack with his knife that he had concealed in his computer bag.
Okay. Now you've given me at least an example of what he was going to articulate for provocation, other than being emotionally harmed in the last year. Where were the scissors? Were there scissors? And did he have any wounds or injuries at all?
No. No, we'll get to this. Does any of this sound familiar to our Crime Curious family? Because it should. How many domestic partner crimes have we covered that the perpetrator claimed the victim started it and that they were actually the victim instead?
All the time.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah. So common. Let me share with you with what the autopsy revealed, and I think we'll all agree about the, defense here, okay? Sophie had 216 stab or cutting wounds.
Jesus.
The wounds were to her eyes, her genitals, her breasts, her left cheek, her left temple, her left ear, and the left side of her neck, as well as 45 wounds to the front of her throat. Her ears and the tip of her nose were cut off, and several pieces of her hair were also cut. The nature of the attack indicated areas of Sophie's beauty or attractiveness being targeted, as we see commonly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he was provoked.
The intimate pieces. Mm-hmm. No.
Yep. Two stab wounds. Go ahead.
Self-defense only goes so far as well.
So you're saying, Your Honor, that 216 goes beyond self-defense?
Clearly.
Okay. Yeah, I thought so. I thought you may feel that way.
Okay.
Sophie's autopsy revealed that two stab wounds pierced her heart and one lung, with other wounds to her neck and throat that severed the main artery and the major vein, which were the cause of her death. Well, that's what they ultimately determined. Don't know how many stabs she went through before that happened. There were also 7 blunt force injuries to her body, as well as defensive wounds. Before you ask, no, he did not have substantial injuries. He was not attacked by a pair of scissors. Nothing showing that there were scissors or an attack that would justify the brutal attack of defense. I use that in air quotes.
So he was attacked by invisible scissors and has invisible injuries.
Mm-hmm, basically. Mm-hmm. Any wounds that he does have were from him with what he was doing, because he was wrestling with her across. There really aren't any injuries to report. Didn't really have much of a chance to defend herself here. So in the investigation, Clayton claimed that he killed Sophie because of the emotional pain that she had caused him, but he denied murdering Sophie, saying it was not premeditated, it was provoked. He was charged with murder, so he pled not guilty. He did, however, admit to manslaughter to investigators and was willing to admit that, but the prosecution was not satisfied with that as a plea. The man carried a knife in his briefcase, he took it in, and he began attacking her immediately after entering her room. Very, very much premeditation, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know that it gets any more obvious. At the end of a week-long deposition hearing, during May 2008 in the Dunedin High Court, Clayton pleads not guilty and was committed for trial by 2 justices of the peace, actually. They did move the trial to Christchurch High Court for suppressed reasons. I'm sure it has a lot to do with the media coverage, because
as location, getting a fair jury. Yes. There's motions for venue lots of times.
Yep. So think about it. You've got a young girl that was attacked by a university lecturer, 216 stab wounds to all the areas that make her a woman and make her beautiful, right? With her mother on the other side of the door. Yeah, I can see how the headlines really grabbed a hold of this.
Well, especially because from a prosecutorial perspective, what you have here in clear words is a basically educator, 11 years her senior, indicates he was provoked for over a year by some type of emotional turmoil caused by a 22-year-old adolescent adult. Mm-hmm. Let me mm-hmm. whose brain isn't done growing, by the way, right, in terms of their relationship. He voluntarily entered into a relationship with somebody 11 years his junior, who he was in a position of authority and control over as a teacher. Then has the forethought to pack a knife, go to her home after a fight and a breakup. She didn't seek him out. He saw her out mm-hmm. after they were broke up, goes up to her room and immediately attacks her while indicating he somehow was stabbed or attacked by invisible scissors that don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
This does not seem like it should be a very difficult case, Charnel.
I wouldn't think so either. They schedule the trial to start June 22nd, 2009. His defense claimed that the issue at trial was whether Clayton was a cold-blooded, premeditated killer or a man who lost the power of self-control after being provoked. The defense's case was that the emotional pain, he was provoked by the emotional pain and the up-and-down relationship with Sophie, which he was not able to deal with, and that Sophie had attacked him with a pair of scissors on the day of the murder. So Clayton Weatherston was represented by Judith Albert Kerr, QC, who was going with that defense of provocation. The knife used in the attack came from Clayton Weatherston's kitchen. The defense stated that he carried it concealed all the time for self-defense.
Carried a kitchen knife?
His kitchen knife as a professor or a teacher, whatever.
How'd he cut his vegetables?
And he probably had more than one knife.
I don't care. I'm not taking my Woostoffs and putting them in a briefcase.
No.
Those are my kitchen knives.
Right. Yeah. No, that was common for him. That's what he always did.
It seems like it would be illegal because even in the freaking U.S., that's carrying a concealed weapon. Mm-hmm. You can't just carry a fixed blade long knife.
No, I don't.
No,
think you can. Right?
I'm telling you, you can. Oh! And if you do, please keep it in the Woostoff box. Right. Like I just bought this from the store. Definitely don't take one out and put it in your briefcase and throw it in your passenger seat.
Do not do that.
No, that gets you a one-way trip to the Hooskow.
Well, he apparently concealed it all the time for self-defense because I guess this guy anticipates he's going to be in a lot of fights.
Or he was a chef and never knew when he needed to bring his own knives for a culinary masterpiece.
Otherwise, the teacher would mark him down for not being prepared.
Listen, chefs do bring their knives. Yes. That would be one good defense to this, is if he was some type of a culinary expert
actually
and carried
a chef on the side.
Chef's knife.
Mm-hmm. But that would be better than what they're trying to pull here. Interestingly enough, the defense did have two psychiatrists who testified for Clayton, but they did say that they diagnosed him with narcissistic personality disorder. Wow, what a surprise.
And not anything that justifies, that's not a mental illness or a mental break that justifies committing a crime. Also highly unlikely to provide any type of therapeutic intervention that can change that.
Oh my God, it's like you just read my notes. That's exactly what I was just saying.
Really?
What I said in my notes was that truly, if I was a prosecutor, I would have flipped this and showed this actually means he's likely to reoffend.
Yeah, that particular personality trait coupled with his clear intent to murder.
And his clear denial of the actual truth here that you murdered. And I'm honestly more
concerned with the argument that they believe that provocation can happen for a year. Trauma can happen. Mm-hmm. He could have been traumatized by the end of the relationship and whatever had occurred during it.
Sure.
But a year long isn't provocation. They're being provoked by somebody pulling a knife on you. It's more self-defense than provocation.
Yeah. But truly, their defense was that he was provoked because of the ups and downs from their relationship, and he couldn't handle it.
He went there.
And he
sought her out. He didn't run into her anywhere.
And Megan, he lied to his mother about his intentions for why he was there. Did I say his mother?
Yeah, lied to his mom, too. He was supposed to meet her for lunch.
That's right. He lied to all the mamas.
Well, no respect for women in general, right?
Of course not, right? But do you also find that I find it interesting that he chose to do this on his birthday.
It was his gift.
That's what I was going to say too. I think he felt like this was his gift to himself. So he was treating himself. Yep. Blew his mama off and missed lunch with her. Goes to Sophie's house. Tells Sophie's mom he's got something for her. I mean, and also that's sick. That's disgusting. You know, I have to give something to her. A knife? Like, I don't like this at all. The trial actually lasted 5 weeks.
Wow.
I was really surprised by that, too. And I don't know that it was consecutive in terms of, you know, days. If it was 5 days for 5 weeks, or if it was just one of those situations where they...
Oh, yeah, lots of places because their dockets are so big and they're so busy. It's just like they hear testimony like 1 or 2 days, and that's why it goes on for weeks or months.
After this 5-week trial, the jury does return a verdict of guilty on July 22nd.
Okay.
And then on September 15th, Justice Judith Potter sentenced Clayton Weatherston to life imprisonment with a minimum non-parole period of 18 years.
Okay, I was hoping to be 25, but theirs must be 18. We know that other countries, life offenses are actually do actually have a term of years mm-hmm. on them, mm-hmm. and then they can apply for parole.
Yep. She said that she did believe the killing was deliberate and controlled. The news media in November 2009 revealed that the victim impact statements of Sophie Elliott's father had been censored at the request of the judge, preventing him from addressing some of the claims that Clayton made during the trial, which really broke my heart because let the man say whatever he wants to say, especially when his daughter's name was allowed to be slandered as part of the defense for a man who was clinically diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder.
Why did they censor him?
I could not find a legal reason, a real reason. I mean, but what he wanted to do was he was not calling him names or
right.
You know,
I was saying so vulgarity and threats and those type of things I certainly can't tolerate in the court. There's sure. decorum to uphold.
Of course.
So as much as you might want to get up and tell your daughter's murderer that they're a piece of shit and you're gonna come after them and you hope they rot in hell and stuff like that. Well, actually I might allow that. But you know, yeah. it's not a, I mean, maybe that's what they censored.
No, he wanted to clear the record on the things that I told you I was not going to regurgitate oh. about Clayton was saying about Sophie. This is a man who is diagnosed okay. with narcissistic personality disorder.
He said disparaging things about the victim during the trial and dad did. Wanted to respond.
Exactly. Dad wanted to clear those up. He was making claims about her sexual provocation, about her abusing him.
She provoked him sexually?
She manipulated him.
By owning breasts?
Also, she was flirtatious with other men. You know, he tried
Well, she's 22.
He tried to claim that she was sleeping with other men. You know, just stuff like that.
I don't fucking care if she was.
This crap that is typical of a narcissist, that are typical of abusers.
You are her 11-year senior educator. Mm-hmm. This is nothing that she brought on herself. And I'm being clear, I don't care if she was dating other men her age and he was jealous of it. That is your own fault.
It doesn't
Break
give
up.
You the right to stab her 216 times.
No.
No, not at all. So that's what Dad wanted to do. He wanted to clear up all the things that had been said wrong about his daughter during that trial. Okay. That's what was censored out, and it really broke my heart. Right. I feel like he should have been able to say what he wanted to.
They decided mm-hmm. it wasn't a victim impact statement, probably yep. more like he was testifying, and so they wouldn't allow it in.
Yep. He did, in June 2011, appeal his conviction, stating that media reports undermined his defense. But the Court of Appeals rejected that argument. In some of this...
You mean the media didn't like your defense and was like, this is stupid? They uh-huh. they can do that. I mean, yep. we have freedom of press here. And I mean, mm-hmm. if they printed something that was libelous or slanderous, they would have been subject to suit.
Also, I'm pretty certain that a majority of this episode, right from the get-go, we have said that defense is stupid.
Well, yes. I mean, since it's over now, that's my professional opinion.
Well, but let me clarify. It's pretty obvious, is what I'm saying.
It's not stupid. It's what they could come up with. How else do you think about it from a defense attorney's? Put yourself in that person's shoes, okay? Right. Say you're a person who legally has an obligation to defend people accused of crimes. Mm-hmm. You look at somebody who's committed that obvious of a murder. You have no clear criminal defense. You've got to come up with something, mm-hmm. okay? So the first is, was there self-defense, like an immediate provocation, as they like to use that word, which we don't hear. And there was a knife, okay? Well, we can't prove it, but prosecutor has to prove it, not us. Then you're going to go with the hard one. And I think it's the one that just dragged this out and required all the experts. That's that he was some type of emotionally stunted man because of the relationship that was her fault that caused provocation over time, causing him basically to break and lose his mind on his birthday and come and kill her.
Correct.
That's it.
But yet he had no history of mental illness.
No. But again, mm-hmm. I'm letting you know why. That's all you could come up. What can anybody else think of another valid defense they could have come up with here?
No. You would have to go with you were provoked or
it's cold-blooded murder.
It is.
That was witnessed.
It is calculated.
Premeditated cold-blooded murder with an ear witness and an eyewitness.
Yes.
I mean, mom saw it when she opened the door.
I mean, truly, the police arrive and he's you're still barricaded over. In the room yeah. with her. Yeah, there is no defense. I mean, honestly, they probably would have been better off with an insanity plea, considering how drastic wounds these were.
But clearly,
he had no history of mental illness.
He wasn't mentally ill. He has a narcissistic personality diagnosis.
Yes, yes, which is not correctable.
not in my experience, no. but...
are charming, though.
You've got to really train yourself to be able to spot one. That's for sure.
Well, and then, you know, don't be the fixer.
Right.
Oh, I mean, I can... I'm going to change him.
He'll change for me.
Well,
yeah, because he makes me feel so special when he's not yelling at me, hitting me, calling me names.
Sweetie,
yeah.
Your magical vagina is not going to change that. Mm-mm. There's Mm-mm. nothing that will.
In the aftermath, Gilbert Elliot, Sophie's father, began an initiative to ban staff and student relationships at the university.
Good move, Dad.
Yep, yep. Because Leslie Elliot, her mom, uncovered abuse between Clayton and Sophie after Sophie's death that she was not aware of. She did not know about.
So she became aware of domestic violence in their relationship.
Yes, yes. So Leslie set up the Sophie Elliott Foundation with another abuse survivor, Kristen Dune. The foundation raised awareness and around domestic violence and warning signs of domestic violence, things like that. The Sophie Elliott Foundation was also instrumental in developing the Love Me Not program in schools, which teaches students about healthy relationships.
Yes.
And Leslie Elliott co-wrote two books on domestic violence. Sophie's Legacy and Loves Me Not and How to Keep Relationships Safe.
I love it.
In 2011, Leslie Elliott was awarded the Next Magazine Woman of the Year Award. And in 2014, was named the Supreme Winner at the Women of Influence Awards.
That's amazing.
That is awesome. The Sophia Elliott Foundation was shut down in 2019 after becoming too much for Leslie to run after she was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Oh, God and bless her.
Sadly, she passed away on Sunday, November 20th, 2022, after a long battle with the disease.
Okay. She did a lot of good at the end.
Oh my
there
gosh,
with what
so
she could.
Much good. And I know that we've said this before, but it is worth saying each time that it's relevant that it's so tremendous to me. Like, it's hard to fathom how a parent can take a tragedy like this and do so much good and turn it into what they have left. They turn it into this beautiful thing. For their child. Like, yeah. I think about the Pattons all the time with Morgan and all the wonderful things
I know, I've been
things
following
that
them
do.
And look at the bench that had just gone in
yes.
recently. And yeah, I was looking at their page.
Yes, it's just, you're a different type of human, a different type of angel in human form on this earth that you can survive something like that, but then carry on and do good things with it instead of just become a shell of a human and turn to substances and
yes.
all the things that we see too often. Right. And so, and no judgment to those people either,
None.
Because I can't imagine.
Well, and you know, here's a plug and a pitch too. And I like that they were bringing family violence, domestic violence awareness to the schools, to the high schools,
yes.
and especially to college girls too, but at the high school level also. Domestic violence isn't always what you think it is. And I know our listeners are pretty well educated and well informed from listening to us. But in the off chance that we have somebody listening today, domestic violence doesn't mean somebody hits you,
Mm-mm.
okay? And it could have been, in Sophie's case, the first time there was actually ever a physical assault and then a murder occurred. Mm-hmm. It could have been completely verbal, controlling behavior. These things are important and they qualify as domestic violence. He doesn't have to be hitting you.
Correct.
If you are being isolated, if you're being made to feel less than, if you ever feel unsafe or scared or worried. If those things are happening in your relationship, it isn't a good relationship. You can love him. And mm-hmm. he can love you or she, mm-hmm. however this is. But there are also agencies and places willing to help. I don't know how many times in my court I have victims come in who are either refusing or ashamed. And let me refer to them as survivors, by the way. Those particular victims survived. So these are survivors who get the luxury of talking afterward.
Right.
They don't want to go to the shelter. They don't want to go to the advocacy organization because it's shameful and it's not.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether you are a drug addicted sex worker or an attorney who comes home at night and has to deal with constant berating and belittling from a narcissist.
Yeah.
Go get help because that's what those agencies are there to do. And there's confidential places that you can go as well. Domestic violence is not going to ever be appropriate anymore. I remember the days, and I do mean by anymore. We used to joke about the rule of thumb, and there was a local person who would, you know, almost jokingly say, I remember the days when it was appropriate to beat your wife and children as long as it was with a switch that was no bigger than your thumb. Okay? This is where rule of thumb comes from.
Right.
I hate using that term.
Yeah.
Terminology in general because I understand the basis for it.
Right, like where it came from.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's never appropriate anymore, and it never will be.
Nope.
Use your fucking words, people.
Right, right.
And get divorced.
Yes, sure can.
We are both spiritual women and Christians. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is, and we respect whatever it is that you do. But you don't have to sit around and be married anymore.
Mm-mm.
You don't. And if you have biblical reasons for wanting to stay married, for sure talk to your pastor, but go talk to other people too, because you don't have to live it.
For sure. But also be very honest with your pastor, with yourself.
Correct.
And your friends
minimize.
As well. No, exactly. Because people can't counsel you if they don't have the truth.
Right.
So that it makes all of their opinions, all of their guidance and knowledge worthless if they don't know the actual truth. Well said, Megan. Well said. Are you ready for a brain bath?
Please bathe me.
I will bathe you. And in keeping with today's theme of brain bath Jason's birthday, we, as we said at the beginning of the episode, we just recorded a brain bath only episode that was, it was
to celebrate our friend.
Yep. To celebrate him. I looked up embarrassing birth stories.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I found some of these.
I found some. This one, my God, Megan, I don't think I could show my face in the hospital with that doctor ever again.
Okay.
Now, keep in mind this poor...
It's not your face is going to recognize.
That's a good point. Well, I don't know. Apparently, the... drugs kicked in for this young lady.
Oh.
And she just kept saying over... and over again, how good it felt to have the doctor's fingers inside her.
No.
Isn't that mortifying?
I would leave.
Just over and
I'll have the baby in the parking lot.
Her partner, she had no idea what she was really saying. Her partner was like, you have to stop. He wanted, actually, the exact quote is, my partner wanted to crawl into a hole and die.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you did later. That. And now you can't ever go back to that doctor and you have to switch hospitals.
Nope. And this is more of like a gross trigger alert for this next one, but also
why you gotta do this to me? You know how I feel about the gross ones.
I can see this happening, and I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. How about that?
Okay, maybe it doesn't. We just
whoops. Megan's knocking her microphone off.
You have me uncomfortable. I am prepared to be uncomfortable. I know you.
I pushed so hard. This is not my story, by the way.
Uh-huh.
It started with this. I pushed so hard that shit flew out of my butt, right into my husband's mouth, and all over his face. Why was your husband that close?
Dude, stay up by my head. That's his own fault.
Super close.
His own
also,
fault.
Also, OBGYNs, how often does that happen?
Well, a lot of them wear shields.
They do. Good point.
The plastic shields when they're down there because they know.
Yes.
They expect fluids and things, secretions to come out.
Right.
And it's your dumbass husband that you told, right? Your dumbass husband that you told, stay by my head, who insists on, let's take a look at nature's miracle. No, nature's miracle just hits you in the face.
Yes. It's a different type of miracle. The miracle of excretions.
Yep. Ah, the human body is a magical thing.
Isn't it? Isn't it? An advertisement popped up. And
what's it advertising?
I don't know.
I need to know what's being advertised.
Look at this. It's a big yellow screen.
It's advertising BuzzFeed.
It's totally blocking everything.
This is a BuzzFeed article, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, did I not say that at the beginning? Sorry about that.
Yeah. All credit to BuzzFeed.
Yes.
And whatever this advertisement is that is all yellow with no words.
Yeah. I don't know what that is about. So I don't know.
It means slow down. Caution.
You're going too fast. How this one, buttgina, fourth degree tear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that poor woman.
Mm-hmm.
A tear
to the fourth degree. Now it's called a buttgina. Yeah, it happens, people. It happens.
Yeah, but they usually attempt to do an episiotomy if it's going to tear that bad. I'm not a fan of episiotomies, by the way.
No.
I'd rather have the very small tear. But the one that tears into your rectum, go ahead and cut it and sew it up nice.
Yeah, right. Real nice, please.
I want a couple extra stitches.
Make that real good.
Make it pretty, please.
So when my husband cut the cord, it comically fire hosed a stream of blood across the room.
That's actually, I would laugh at that. That's not gross. It's just umbilical blood, although you're wasting it. It's good blood.
It is good blood. That's for
it's
sure.
Cord blood.
The doctor didn't show up and the nurses had to deliver my baby. Why, you might ask? Because she had to do her hair.
The doctor did?
The doctor. Mm-hmm.
If that's how she is as a person, you're better off with your very experienced nurses.
You know what? This is what I think is happening. I think she might have been getting a romp in the, what do they call that?
Supply closet.
Yeah. Or whatever.
On-call room.
The on-call room, yeah. Because the article says when the doctor finally arrived 15 minutes after my daughter was born, her hair looked terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's busy doing something else.
I hope she was just sleeping and woke up. But
right.
That happens. OBs are going to miss birth sometimes.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you get checked and they're like, shit, that baby's coming. I paged the doctor, but.
But here we are.
I'm
catching it.
Station 10 and they're 10 out.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is what it is. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening today. Gosh, Megan, we have plans to record this weekend and I'm working on a juicy two-parter.
I'm excited.
Be prepared for that coming up. And if you would like hundreds of episodes so many episodes, join our Patreon. The link is below. We would be so grateful to join you as part of the Patreon family. We really do interact very personally with our Patreons. And what else? Are we missing anything else?
No.
Be safe out there.
On social media.
Yes.
Reach out for help if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to stay in bad relationships. You can get out of them.
That's right. And also, if you're about to give birth, make sure that your partner stays a safe distance away from your vagina.
Yeah, and if he doesn't, remember,
it's on him.
It's his fault.
It sure is. Or hers.
Or hers. Yeah. I was just going to say that.
Yes, absolutely. All right, y'all. Thank you so much. We hope that you keep it curious.
And keep listening.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.